Archer will say good morning. Let's begin. We have a beautiful daf in front of us today. Today's daf is Kuf Ches 108. We are picking up on Kuf Zayin on with days 107b. And we are picking up with Amarli Rav Yehuda Rav Adam Mishucha. A lot to do today. So we are four lines up on Kuf Zayin on with days from before the lines get wide. So about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, about 14 lines up from the bottom of the page. So it says the Gemara, Omli Rav Yehuda Rav Ada Mishucha. So Rav Yehuda said to Rav Ada, I will say, Mishucha means a land surveyor. A land surveyor. So he says, Lo tizalzel b'mishchasa. Do never go ahead and take liberties, or literally, don't take lightly your responsibility to survey land. Why? In other words, what he's saying is, if you're a land surveyor, make sure to try to be as exact in your work as possible. Why? They call porta or porta, because they'll say sometimes if you're surveying land, you think to yourself, what does a couple of inches over here mean, or a couple of feet over here? What's the big deal? Because understand, when it comes to property, every little bit of land, called porta or porta, chazi likurkama rishka. You could always use it to plant saffron. In other words, that what Rabbi Yehuda was saying was, every piece of land, every piece of property, every piece of real estate is worth money. Because even the smallest parcel of land could be used for something. In this case, over here, he's saying saffron, which happened to be a high-end plant that could yield its owners a lot of money. Okay, so it says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Rav Ada Mishucha. So Rav Yehuda says, now we're going to get into some of the the laws of land surveying. Rav Yehuda says, actually, this is fascinating. Because what you're going to see over here is, this Gemara is the precursor to the halachas of setbacks, right? Meaning when you go ahead and you have to build. So you know, again, that depending on what you're building, there are certain laws. You have to set back your property from property lines. So you're going to see over here, this is amazing. This is amazing. So it says the Gemara, so Amarlei, Rav Adam Mishucha, last short line. So Rav Yehuda again said to Rav Adam, the land surveyor, Dalit Amos da'anigra zilzulbuhu. The four Amos that are by Anigra Bosei is an irrigation canal. So those four Amos, we're going to see now is that what we say is the four Amos next to an irrigation canal, nothing should be planted on it. That area should remain as open area. So Zilzilba. Now Zilzilba means that don't be so meticulous with the amount. Now look at Rashi. Zilzilbahen. Al tidaktek bahen laharchivan. Meaning, you don't have to measure it exactly. It's okay just to guesstimate with that amount. Da'anara, but when, first wide line, but when you're going ahead and you're measuring, you know, the setback, so to speak, the open space next to the river, lo timashchenu klal. Do not go, look at Rashi, lo timashchenu klal. Ela ba'omet hadas tanichenu, kedei shiyiyu nikarim le'inayim shein shlemos urechavos. So essentially what Rav Yehuda was saying is the following. When you're measuring the Dalet Amos setback for an irrigation canal, you don't have to be so exact. Meaning if it's Dalet Amos, fine. If it's a little bit less, it's okay also. But however, when it comes to a river, you have to err on the side of caution. And you should, even though you only have to leave Dalet Amos, at the end of the day, you should try to leave a little bit more. Now what's the logic behind that? Rabbi Huda l'tamei dam Rabbi Huda, arba amos da nigra libnei nigra, da nara de kuli alma. So we'll say for a very simple reason, because remember the irrigation canal only impacts to the fields that are directly abutting that irrigation canal that are using it. So it has a limited impact. On the other hand, again, the river services a lot more people, and therefore again, you have to be much more makbid on the open space. Machriz Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Ami used to announce the following: Melo kosve nagdi betray avri nara kotsu. Now, we'll say literally, this is the following. So, just to illustrate this for just a moment, when they speak about a river, what often used to happen was the following: they would pull barges on the river. So how would you pull a barge on the river? So today, like you have a tugboat, right? You would pull a barge on the river. So how do they do it? Interestingly enough, what they would do is they would have people often on both sides of the river with ropes attached to the barge, and they would pull the barge down river like that. Obviously, this only works if it's a more narrow river. Therefore, again, what the Gemara is going to say over here is the following. Every river, you have to make sure that there is a clearing on the side of the river for enough space for the bargemen to go ahead and pull the barge down river. It's amazing just to see how it works. So we're both saying, this is an issue over here. Now, by the way, what's the chiddush? The chiddush, as we'll see, is it's possible that somebody owns waterfront property. Right? I own waterfront property. I don't own waterfront property. Right? But if I were to own water, not there's anything wrong if I own waterfront property. But so if you own waterfront property, the interesting part is there's a halacha that prevents you from building essentially on the waterfront. Not only that, but if you have wooded area, we're going to see, that abuts the waterfront, you have to clear that area. Because again, since the river is Rishos HaRabim, since everybody needs to use the river, so along with the usage of the river comes the usage of, we'll call it, for lack of a better term, the banks of the river. So even though, again, this is perhaps might be privately owned property, my rights essentially are yielded to the rabbim, are yielded to the public. So therefore, again, says the Gemara, Machaz Rabbi Ami, Melokasvi Nagdi Betrei Abi Dinara. You have to clear a path, the width of the shoulder width of the bargemen on both sides of the river. So you have to kotsu, means you have to go ahead and you have to clear that area from trees. Rav Nosson Bar Hoshia, kas shisar amsa. So let's listen to this. Rav Nosson Bar Hoshia ordered that 16 amos be cleared right next to the river, which is a lot of space. Asu halei b'nei mashrunya dafnuhu. So listen to this. So the people of b'nei mashrunya, the people of mashrunya, that was the city, came and they beat up Rav Nosson Bar Hoshia. Tough crowd. So they went ahead and they beat him up because they felt that he was taking too much of their property. Now, why did he clear 6 hours? So let's remember again, the Gemara just said you have to clear the shoulder width of the bargeman, which is essentially another way of saying there has to be enough room for the bargeman to be able to walk. Yet he cleared 16 amos. Who's Savar Kirish Sarabim? So we'll say, where does 16 amos come from? We remember from our Shabbos days, 16 amos is the shear of Rosh Hashanah. That's the width of a public domain. And that's why he cleared that amount. Velohi, Hassam Ba'inan Kulihai, Hachem Yishum Amtuchi Ashaleinu, Kemalei Kafsi Nagdi Sargi. So we'll say, by Rosh Hashanah, you need a much wider area. Why? Because the mice, you need room for pedestrian traffic as well as vehicular traffic. When I say vehicular traffic, meaning like wagons. Over here by the edge of the river, all I need is enough space for the bargeman to be able to walk. Rabbi Barafuna Habiluahu Abba, Aguda Dinara. Rabbi Barafuna had a forest that abutted the river. Amru Le, Nikots Mar. So they asked, so the townspeople, or they're called the public works people, asked Rabbi Barafuna, can you please clear your trees? Meaning, can you please clear your trees that are next to the river? So Amar Lehu, Kotsu Ilai Betasai, Vahadr Nikots Ana. So to which Rabbi said, you know what? When the people upstream and the people downstream clear their trees, I'll clear my trees. In other words, my trees are only meaningful if everybody in front of me and in back of me, upstream and downstream, clear their trees. But if they're not going to clear their trees, I'm not clearing my trees. So this is actually amazing. So the Gemara says, Hechi Avitachi. But Rabbi, how can you say that? V'haksiv, his koshishu v'kashu. Yet the Pasuk says, it will say in Safanya, his koshishu v'kashu, search within yourself and then search within others. What does it mean? Rabbi said, it's a very profound yisod. V'amrei shlokish, kishot atzmecha, v'achar kach kishot achirim. Rabbi said, this is an incredible yisod, because all too often we're a bit too judgmental in life. Sometimes the most important thing is, first search, judge, and rectify yourself. And then you could go ahead and search, judge, and help to rectify others. So Rabbi, no, you have an obligation to clear your trees. What does it matter what the people upstream or downstream do? So the Gemara says, Hasam, Abba debe parzak rufila haba. So also what Rabbi was concerned about was the following. That a little bit, I don't know if this was upstream, was the parzak, the Persian governor, had an estate there, had a waterfront estate. Va'amar, I kaitsu kaitsina, v'ilo kaitsu ama ikits. Rabbi felt that this Persian governor, Parzak, was not going to clear his trees. He wasn't going to do it. So Rabbi therefore said, if he's not going to do it, then what is the point in me doing it? He said, if there's enough room on my side of the river for the bargemen to get by, even with Parzak's trees there, then there's no need for me to take down my trees, top of Kufres, and if there's not enough room on my side of the river because of Parzak's trees, then what's going to happen? The bargeman will go out and pull the barge from the other side of the river. So really what Rabbi was saying is, I'm not trying to be difficult. It's just at the end of the day, I'm willing to take down my trees if taking down my trees makes a difference. But if the people upstream, the people downstream are not removing their trees and the bargeman can't get by, that means they will have already decided to pull the barge from the other side of the river. In which case, again, my tree removal will make absolutely no difference. So the Gemara goes weiter. Rabbi Barba Nachman Hava Ka'azl Ba'arba. Rabbi Barba Nachman was traveling by boat. Chazahu Abba Vikoy Aguda Dinara. He saw that there was a forest, there was literally a forest that was growing by the bank of the river. So, meaning he saw that someone was in violation of the halacha and had not trimmed their trees, had not removed their trees by the bank of the river to allow for the passage of the bargemen. Amar Lahu, Diman. So Rabbi Barav Nachman asked, whose forest is this? Amulei to Rabbi Barav Huna. They told him it's Rabbi Barav Huna's forest. Amulei, the Yatsarim Vahasagonim Vasganim Haisa Bema'ala Zerishona. So he quotes over here the pasuk from Ezra, literally again saying that it was the hand of the Sarim and the Sagan, the hand of the important people who rebelled first. In other words, that how could it be that the leadership is not following the proper halacha? Amaluhu Kotsu. So what happens? So Amaluhu Kotsu. He said to them, cut it down. Rabbi Barav Nachman was on the boat and orders his guys to cut down the forest of Rabbi Barav Huna. So what happens? Rabbi Barav Huna comes home, and what does he find? Ashkechei dekayetz. He finds that his forest has been cut down. Amar man kaitze takutz anfei. The one who cut down my forest, let his limbs be cut off. So Amri Kuli Shani Dira Barav Huna Lo Kayim Lezara Lo Rabbi Barav Nachman. I will say tragically, all of the years that Rabbi Barav Huna was alive, Rabbi Barav Nachman was unable to have viable offspring. In other words, that was the curse ultimately again of Rabbi Barav Huna. Which I will say, you see this theme over and over, where tzaddikim have to be especially vigilant with their words, because the words of a tzaddik, the words of righteous people, carry incredible weight, even sometimes with unintended consequences. So Rabbi Barav Huna gets home, is very upset that ultimately, now again, I both say, remember, these stories are related. Remember, again, Rabbi Barav Huna did not cut down his forest. Why? Because remember, Parzak, the Persian governor, wasn't cutting down his. He just felt there was absolutely nothing gained to the general public from me for taking down my trees. Rabbi Barav Nachman walks in there in the middle. I both say, by the way, there's a lot of important lessons over here. So the other lesson is, very often in life, we walk into the middle of situations. So often we think when we walk into something, I've got it all sized up, right? I know exactly what's going on over here. And we don't. And very often we take action, or we say things, or we make judgments based on what it is that we see, when we don't realize we're only seeing a freeze frame, we don't see the entire story. So Rabbi Barav Nachman orders for the forest to be cut down because he jumps into the middle of a situation assuming he knows the circumstances, and he doesn't. Rabbi Barav Huna acts or reacts in a very sharp way, not understanding or realizing the unintended consequences of his sharp lashon. So very, very strong lessons. So the Gemara goes weiter. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Hakol le'igli gafra. I'm saying this is very interesting. Everyone is obligated to go ahead and participate in what we call the igli gafra. What's the igli gafra? Rashi says, Hakol mesayin ligdor chomasayir ulahamid shareha shleikani sitzavasan alir. We'll say everyone in the city is obligated to participate in contributing towards the walls of the city. Actually, literally, the gates of the city. So again, the halach is every member of the city has to contribute. Afilu miyasmi, even from orphans. See, I will say, normally, again, we've learned already a number of times that we don't usually touch the property of Yisomim. However, again, for certain things like the gates of the city, which are of objective benefit for everyone, that we collect even from the Yisomim. Avarabonon lo. This is actually a very interesting Gemara. But we do not collect from the Rabbanim. You don't collect Rambam. In other words, the Rabbanim don't have to pay towards the tax for the city, for the city doors. Why? It's actually quite beautiful. My time, what's the reason? Rabbanan lo tzrichi netirusa. Because the Rabbanim do not require the security of the doors. Why don't they require the security of the doors? Rashi says, lo tzrichi netirusa, torasa mishamrasa. Because their Torah ultimately guards them, dechsev, b'shach b'cha, tishmor alecha. However, lekarya depasya, I will say, what about for the wells? What about for the wells of the city? So for the wells of the city, afilu mirabbanon. Even the rabbanim have to contribute, because even if you want to taina that the rabbanim don't need the doors of the city for their protection because they have their Torah, they still need to drink. They still need to drink. So look at Rashi for just a moment. Fine. So therefore, again, the Rabbanan have to contribute to the wells. However, interestingly enough, fellow Amran Ella Delo Nafki Beuchlusta. But that's only true. Rabbanan say, when do the Rabbanan have to participate? The Rabbanan have to participate financially. Meaning, if let's say they're hiring someone to go out and dig the well. But if the way it's working is that the city people get together themselves to go ahead and dig the well, the Rabbanim do not have to participate in the digging of the well. So the Gemara says, why? Because the Rabbanan lav b'nei mefak bach luzaninu. Because it is not appropriate for the Rabbanim to go ahead and participate in the digging of the well. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Tenel nafki boch luza, shen yotzin bali batim, Atzman ba'achluza, u'ba'aloksia lachbar, elagovin mo'os esochrim polim. So what's this? At the end of the day, if the townspeople are collecting money to get someone else to go ahead and hire to dig the well, the Rabbanim have to participate in that financially. But if the townspeople are going out themselves to dig the well, then the Rabbanim should not participate in that digging. Rashi says, lav b'nei mefek ninu, k'nai hu lohem. Because again, it's considered to be a lack of covet, ultimately again, for the Rabbanim to participate in the manual labor of digging the well. Fine. I'm Rav Yehuda, Lekaria Dinara Tesai, Misayeya Eloi. Well, so listen to this. Now the Gemara is going to get into some very interesting discussions about what happens when you have multiple fields that share the same, essentially irrigation source, share the same river. So literally, Rav Yehuda says the following. Lekaria Dinara. If the Rashi says over here, Lekaria Dinara, Kishema'alas Sirton, V'noflim Ba'avanim, U'me'akvin Merutzas Hamayim, V'korun U'menakinos L'haver Mechsholov. When the river gets stopped up and you have to go ahead and clear debris from the river, who is obligated to participate in the clearing of the river? So says the Gemara, well, it depends. Tasoi misayeya iloi. We'll say if at the end of the day, I'm sorry, I just lost the place over here. Oh, tasoi misayeya iloi. So literally, we'll say tasoi means, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. The people downriver, right? The people downriver, go ahead and help the people upriver. Now look at Rashi just a moment. Tasoi misaya ililoi, kishal yomnim mitaknin kinegdan lemala. I'm sorry, I just said the opposite. When the people upstream have to fix the river, let's say the stoppage is upstream, so what's the halacha? The halacha is the people downstream also have to help. Yeshal ha-tachtonim l'sayon. Shemichsholin ha-alyonim ma'akvin ma'imilei, right? Nimsa tikun ha-alyonim ma'ezras ha-tachtonim. So let's listen to this. So therefore, tasoi mesei li'iloi. When the stoppage is upstream, even the people downstream have to go ahead and help to clear the river. Why? Because they benefit from it. We'll say, as we're going to see essentially, it's a very simple principle. When do you know if you have to go ahead and help with clearing out the river stoppage? If you benefit. Any case where you derive some type of benefit, or again, you are at a disadvantage as a result of this stoppage, then you have to help out, even if the stoppage is somewhere else upstream or downstream. So in this case over here, Tasoi Misayila, yet Eloi lo misaye tasoi. Yet the Rabbanan say, if the stoppage is downstream, the people upstream don't have to help. Why? Because again, that stoppage doesn't impact them. Vichilufa b'maya demitra. And the Rabbanan say, it's the exact opposite when it comes to runoff water. See, remember again, so what they used to have, I guess we still have it today, is remember, roads were made of dirt. So what happens? Rainy season, everything becomes muddy as it is. But again, what you want to make sure is that you have runoff, that the water runs off from the Rishus HaRabim. So they would have these drainage ditches. So the Gemara says the exact opposite by the drainage ditch. So Lemaisa, again, what did we just say? If there's by regular river, if there's a stoppage upstream, the people downstream have to help as well, because that stoppage impacts them. On the other hand, if the stoppage is downstream, the people upstream don't have to help. In the drainage ditch, it's just the opposite. Look at Rashi for just a moment. About v'chilufa b'may d'mitra, kigon b'ir, shamayim kashim l'harbos titu l'kalkalas adrach ma'osam charis b'morod, lor amayim chutzler, im niskalkal acharis keneget ha'tachtonim. So we'll say, in this case, if let's say the stoppage was, we'll call it downstream, in the drainage ditch, then, in that case, the upper ones do have to help. Why? Because remember, it'll flood back. On the flip side, if the stoppage is quote-unquote upstream of the drainage ditch, the people downstream don't have to help. Why? Because it doesn't impact them. Again, it's a very simple klal. Tayin al-Hachir Bais that supports this. Chamesh ginos hamistakbos b'mayim imahayon echad. We'll say if you have five gardens, five fields, who are all fed from the same stream, they're all irrigated from the same stream, then iskalkel ha-ma'ayon, and the stream gets stopped up, kulam metaknos im ha-al-yona. Everyone has to go ahead and help if the stoppage is upstream. Because remember, again, if the stoppage is upstream, everyone is impacted by that. So we'll say, it turns out then what? Then the guy who's all the way downstream, he will always have to help everyone else with any kind of stoppage. But yet, interestingly enough, no one has to help him when the stoppage is by him. Right? Because remember, again, if the stoppage is all the way downstream, let's say by the last field, the only person that impacts is who? Is that particular individual. So, Lebiv Echad. So too, if you have five chatzeros who all allow their runoff water to drain into one drainage ditch, then iskalkel habiv, and something happens, there's a stoppage in the drainage ditch, kulan mitakonos imatachtono. So we'll say, so remember again, this is just the reverse. Everyone has to help with the stoppage that's downstream. Because remember again, if there's a stoppage downstream, then what happens? There's a backup, it's flooding. Nimtzeis, hell, yonam etakenes in kulon. Therefore, we'll say, it turns out that the guy who's all the way upstream has to help from the drainage ditch, has to help with everyone else. And yet, umetakenes latzma, yet, when the stoppage is by him, he's got to work alone. Meaning no one has to help him. He's on his own. Amr Shmuel, hay man da achzik beraksa dinara chatzifa. Well, so listen to this. Chatzifa havi. So a person who goes out, look at Rashi. It's the second wide line in Rashi, end of the line. Hay man da achzik beraksa dinara b'shani aparsa. Well, this is actually a very interesting halacha. Or very, kind of halacha concept. And so Rashi says, Bishnei Parsim, in the years of Persian rule, Hayakarka mufkar l'chola kodim l'hachzikbo, v'lefroa l'melech taska, d'humas shel karka. So we'll say, the way it used to work under Persian law was the following. If somebody defaulted on their taxes, so the kingdom, the monarchy, essentially said, okay, you are now essentially making your property hefker, making it ownerless. Who could lay claim to the property? Whoever pays off the tax debt first, ultimately owns the property. That's how it used to work under Persian law. So let's listen to this. So if a guy comes along and says, he takes property that became hefker because the previous owner didn't pay his taxes. He pays the taxes to the Persian authorities and the land is his. And what does he do? He begins building a house right on the riverbank, right waterfront property. Now, both say, remember, this is going back to our previous discussion where we discussed the idea that you have to leave open space by the bank of the river. So if somebody does this, Rabbi Osei, chatzifa havi, it's chutzpah, meaning it's terrible chutzpah to do this, because ultimately he's making things complicated for the general public, but saluke lo mesalkinole. But we don't really have the ability to remove him. Rashi says over here, about saluke, medina lo mesalkinole. We don't really have the ability to stop him from doing it. But listen to this. V'ha'idna tika kasvi parsoi kani l'cha ad mali tzavari susei maya. So also listen to this. But now the Persians instituted an interesting rule that when you went ahead and you bought waterfront property, this is actually quite interesting, that came with water rights as well. So if I bought waterfront property, not only do I own the property, but literally I own the water up to the point, to the depth that it goes up to my horse's neck, which is very interesting. So let's say, so again, Admali, look at the Lashon over here, Admali Tzavari Suse Maya. Until ultimately, again, I get up to the neck of my horse. So then in that case, Salukina and Misalkinale, we would have the ability to remove the individual. So we'll say, so what's happening over here? Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Va'idna dekasiv parsoi. We'll say it's five lines in and the wide lines in Rashi. Va'idna dekasiv parsoi. Va'osan halok chinsados shal sasanar. Kani lucha asada atochanar. At melot savasos. Va'lochin gojrin gidiran. Rachok minanar. Eshelo lekalkulas mokom harabim. So we'll say, listen to this. So what, according to Rashi, what the Gemara is saying is the following. If somebody bought waterfront property, and let's say they did the right thing, what they did was, although they own the property into the water, lemaisa, again, they go ahead and they put their fence further back to leave room by the bank of the river for the bargemen, right, for the use of the river. And someone else comes along and decides to build something on that property. So again, I will say, that person will be called the squatter. That person will be ejected from the property. If he times 1 second, the property line is back there by Reuven's fence. We say, no, his property line is not there. His property line actually extends all the way into the water, and you're building on here illegally, in which case we'd be able to remove the individual. Amarav. Now we get into a very interesting discussion. Let's say I come along and I purchase a piece of property in between two brothers or in between two partners. Right? So Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Reuven and Shimon are partners. They have two fields, and in the field there's a third field right in the middle of them. I come in, I buy that middle field. So we'll say, says the Gemara, Chatzifa Havi, it's incredible chutzvah, but Saluke lo misalkinolei. But we will not go ahead and remove him. So we'll say, so why is it chutzvah? So it seems to be what the Gemara is saying over here, is that Lemaisa, because this is adjoining property, those brothers or those partners should have first rights at that property. We're going to discuss this in just a moment. But Rav Nachman says, no, nami misalkinon. No, we can actually remove the purchaser from that property. When we say remove the purchaser, well, essentially what that means is we could force him to sell to one of the brothers or to one of the partners. So says the Gemara, well, what's going on over here? What's going on over here? Rabbi says, this is not a din in Bar Metzra. Rabbi says, remember, what is Bar Metzra? Bar Metzra essentially means that if I own property and the field next to me, right, Reuven is selling his field next door to me, there's a halacha of essentially a right to first refusal. That I, as the neighbor, should have the first opportunity to go ahead and purchase that property, because that property represents a unique opportunity for me. Why? Because we'll say there's only two, right? Well, I guess there's up to four other options to buy contiguous fields to your own. Therefore, this offers a unique opportunity for me, and therefore I get the right to first refuse from a halachic perspective. So if Nachman says, in this case over here, where I buy a property in between two partners or two brothers, ultimately, again, I should be removed, but it's not a din in Bar Metzra. Why? What's going on here? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, v'im yishum din in Bar Metzra, im einon lo achim v'lo shutfim. Ela mikoach matzronos ba'in ala machzik va'omrim anu hayinu mitzapim lakachta she'anu tzrichim lekarka v'tov lechol echa liknos b'samachlo v'lo likach b'china makam acher lo misalkin alei de'lo ich paslan dina debar metzra klas. So also, Nachman seems to be saying over here, the reason that we will remove me is because I have interfered in the possibility of brothers consolidating a familial area, or for partners consolidating a contiguous business plot. That's why we remove me from that middle lot of land. But if it's a din of Bar Metzra, if that's what Rav Nachman says, no, I'm not worried about Bar Metzra for reasons that we will discuss. Nardoy Omri, we'll say first wide line Kuf Chesam Adal, the Nardoyim say, I feel Mishum Dina de Bar Metzra Misalkinale. No, the Nardoyim say, in reality, we absolutely will remove the individual because of the din of Bar Metzra. Because Rav say, the halacha is that one of those partners, one of those brothers, should absolutely be given the first right to go ahead and purchase that property. I essentially swooped in there, not not illegally, it's not illegal, but inappropriately. Therefore, it's only appropriate that I cede that land. And again, I don't have to give it, I could sell it, of course, to one of the brothers, one of the partners. Mishum Shenemar Vasisa Hayashar Vahatov Be'ene Hashem. Because the Mosai, the Pasuk says, you shall do that which is straight and that which is good in the eyes of God. The Mosai, by the way, this is the concept of Dina de Bar Metzra, the idea that I should allow someone who lives next door to the property to buy the property is a din of Vasisa Yosher Vahatov, is a din in Yashrus, and a din in appropriate conduct. Take a look at Rashi. Vasisa Yosher Vahatov, Dover Shi'ata Nechsar Kolkach, Shetimtza Karkos B'mokomacher. Because Mosai, if I'm buying land, so I don't buy this field, I'll buy a different field, meaning from me, who's the outside purchaser. So although this might be a nice piece of land, there are other properties to be bought as well. So again, essentially, if I could give up this right and allow the neighbor to purchase the field, and I could purchase a field elsewhere, then so what? I should yield it. Shabbosai already gives us a window. We're going to get into this a little bit more. That the halacha of Bar Metzra essentially applies when? When there is no real loss for me, the purchaser, to walk away. Right? So meaning if I can get a field here, or I can get a field a mile away, and it doesn't make any real difference to me if it's here or it's a mile away, then the halacha is, give the rights to the neighbor. But we're going to see where this particular purchase represents a qualitative advantage for me, the halacha of Bar Metzra will not apply, as we'll see. Asa imloch bay. So let's listen to this. Let's say I go, it's actually a fascinating halacha. I go over to Reuven. Now, Reuven lives in his field. The field next door to Reuven is going for sale. Now, I recognize that in reality, Reuven should have the right of first refusal. So what do? I go over to Reuven and say, Reuven, do you mind if I buy the field? Do you mind if I buy the field? Meaning, I'm asking, even though you as the Bar Metzra should have the right, the first right to purchase it, do you yield that right to me? So listen to this. So Amalei Ezel v'Izbin. So if I go over to Reuven, Reuven, do you mind if I buy the field? V'Amalei Zil Zabun. And Reuven says, yes, go buy it. So Tzarech L'Mikne Mine Olo. So we'll say, interestingly enough, so do I have to make a kinyan with Reuven? So you will say, here's the shayla. Is Reuven is transferring, is essentially transferring to me his right of first refusal. So do I have to be makabel kinyan from him? In other words, do we have to formally transfer this right? Or is it just enough for him to say, go ahead? So olo, Ravina Amar, lo tzarach l'miknemine. Ravina says, no, you don't have to do a kinyan. Now Adoyam tzarach l'miknemine. Now Adoyam says, no, you have to do a kinyan. V'hilchasa, we'll say, you ready for this? Tzarach l'miknemine. We'll say, actually, quite amazingly enough, I have to be makabel kinyan with Reuven to essentially, to effectively, officially receive that right to go ahead and purchase the property. Hashta da amrit tzarach l'miknemine. So let's say, now that we said that I'm supposed to do a kinyan with Reuven, so listen to this. Ilo kanumine, if I did not do a kinyan, ayiker zvizol birshusei. I will say, therefore it turns out that, well, if I was not makabel kinyan, then technically speaking, Reuven, the neighbor, has the right to force me to sell it to him, and therefore any subsequent appreciation or depreciation in the land is ultimately borne by Reuven. Zaban b'meya, v'shavin masan. I will say, listen to this. Let's say I went ahead and I bought the field. I'm not the neighbor, I'm the buyer. I went ahead and I bought the field for 100 zuz, interestingly enough, the field was worth 200 zuz. So I got a major bargain. I got a major bargain. So I will say, so now what happens? Let's say in this case now, where I have to sell it to the Bar Metzra, I have to sell it to Reuven. So what's the shayla? Do I have to sell it to him at the price for which I got it? Or for the market price? So the Gemara says, well, we have, depends, chazino. Well, say it depends. We have to look at the seller. If the seller would have sold essentially to anyone at a discount, then lemaisa again, all Reuven has to pay me is 100. However, if the only reason the seller sold it as a discount was why? Because it was me. Because I have a relationship with him, then the ma'aseh and the value of the property is 200, and that's what Reuven would have to give me. Yoav li ma'asan v'shakilei. Zobin ma'asan v'shavi me'ar. Listen to this. What happens after this interesting case? I, the buyer, outside buyer, came and bought the field for 200, but it's really only worth 100. I will say, now again, with real estate, sometimes it's hard to Vayetis. That's why this is actually easier with agricultural than residential property. Because agricultural property often has an objective value based on the output of the field. So let's say, again, I bought a field for 200, but it was only worth 100. So Bosse, so now again, the bar metzra, right? Reuben, the neighbor, says, okay, you bought it illegally. I had the right to buy it. Sell it back to me. So what's the shayla? The shayla is, what do I have to go ahead and sell it back to him for? So Matzi Amarli, he could say to me, Litakuni shadarti chavalo la'avusi. So Reuben, the bar metzra, could say, listen, literally, I sent you to for my benefit, not to my detriment. So Bosse is another way of saying that, look, the fact that you got yourself into a bad deal is not my problem. I'll pay you the value of the field, but I'm not going to pay you because you overspent.
If you make the kinyan and then you decide not to buy it, does the landowner retain the right to now sell it?
No, that's an excellent point. No. That right was yielded to me. If I choose not to exercise it, it reverts back ultimately to Reuven. Personally. Amri Mar Kashish Rebbe Rav Chisra Rav Ashi. Hachi Amri Nardai Mushum Rav Nachman. Ein Ona Al Karkos. So we'll say, by the way, just the Gemara brings this up now. Why? Because you just had a case of where what? Where you paid 100% above market value for the land. So one second, isn't that Ona? Right? Don't we get into overcharging? To which Shabbos, we already learned, and this is how we paskin, there is no Ona by Karko. Right, there is no such thing as overcharging by real estate, because again, real estate is one interesting commodity which actually is pushed by the market, right? It's whatever the market allows for. And therefore no ona by karka. Says the Gemara, Zabinle Garyua Daara Bemitsia Nechase. Both of this is very interesting. Watch this. Let's say Reuven has a piece of land. He has a big field. So this is actually, okay, we'll call Reuven. So what happens? Reuven has a neighbor who happens to be named Shimon. We'll call him. So look what Reuven does. Reuven sells me a tract of the middle of his field. Right? So literally, again, it's one field. I guess this, you know, this is the days, you know, before the halachas of he subdivides the field. Right? So he does a subdivision. He goes ahead and he literally sells me a middle of the field. So we'll say, so what's the shayla over here? So the shayla over here is the following. We'll say, look at Rashi. We just know. So we'll say. So the issue over here that we're concerned about is the following: is this a subterfuge? Meaning, is there a little bit of funny business going on over here? Because we'll say, what could happen? You see, Reuven might want to sell me his field. He might want to sell me his field. But what happens? He can't sell me his field. Why? Because who does he first have to offer it to? He first has to offer it to Shimon. Right? Now, we'll say again, we're going to get into halachos about when this, but he wants, so it could be that what is he doing? When he sells me a tract in the middle, so what does that allow him to do? You see, technically, Shimon the neighbor is not entitled to that tract in the middle. Why? Why? Because it's not adjoining to his field. There's still a tract of land there ultimately that belongs to him. Now, here's the chap. The chap is now, if Reuven wants to turn around and sell me the other two tracts later on, it works fine. Why? Because now I am a bar metzra. So I'll say, so the question is this a legal sale or not? Or is this clearly just a subterfuge to avoid the halachos of bar metzra? To which the Gemara says, it depends. Zabin le giruya da'ara b'metzia nechase. If Reuven sells me giruya b'osim, literally means like a measure. A tract of land in the middle of his property. Chazina. So we look at the following. I edisi iziburisi zabina zavina. We'll say, since the tract of land is qualitatively different than the rest of the land, meaning let's say that middle tract is either higher quality or lower quality, so it's dramatically different than the rest of the field, then I understand how that field could be reckoned on its own. V'ilo, we'll say, amadeis, v'ilo irume kama'ar. But I will say, if that middle tract is no different than the rest of the field, then what? Then this is clearly just harama. That this is just a subterfuge, and it would be in a legal transaction. Says the Gemara, matana less than mishum dina de bar metzra. We'll say, the halachos of bar metzra do not apply to a gift. Very important halacha. If I gift you something, I do because a gift, Rabosei, is a different type of transaction. Because a gift is a different type of transaction, and the Gemara will say, essentially we're going to see, here's the operative theme. So bar metzra only applies when the playing field is equal. But if this field represents something unique to someone, then in most cases like that, the halachos of bar metzra will not apply. So for example, Reuven lives next to Shimon. Reuven wants to give me the field as a gift. So I'll say, because that represents a unique opportunity for me, I am not obligated to yield that opportunity to the neighbor. Says the Gemara Vayter, Amar HaMeimar, listen to this, but Ikasav Le'achrayis, Ispa Mishom Dina Darabasav. I'll say, watch this. If somebody gives me a gift with Achrayis, so I'll say, what is the gift with Achrayis? Means, Reuven gifts me the field, and he says to me, and if for some reason any of my creditors come and seize this field, I will make you whole. So Rabbo said, that is no longer a gift. What is that called? That's called a sale. See, let's say, when you gift something to someone, you don't normally guarantee the continuity of that gift. Achrayis is usually a function of a real estate transaction. So if we see that the quote-unquote gift giver guarantees to the recipient achrayis, that raises our halachic intent and tells us that, you know what, this is not a real gift. This is an under-the-table transaction. So the Gemara goes weiter. Macher kol mechasav la'echad, less pay mishum din ha'demar. So we'll say next case. Let's say Reuven sells all of his property to me, all of his property, all of his holdings that are dispersed. So the halach, then the halachos of bar mitzvah do not apply in that case. Because since I'm buying Reuven's property in its totality, the neighbors to each of those fields do not have first rights over me. Lebaylim harishon. This is actually another interesting halacha. Let's say again, I bought a field from Reuven, and then I want to go ahead and sell the field back to Reuven, to the original owners. Then again, less mishum dina de bar mitzvah. There is no halacha of bar mitzvah in that case as well. Zabin me'akum v'zabin la'akum. We'll say if I'm purchasing a field from a Gentile or selling a field to a Gentile, less mishum dina de bar mitzvah. There are no halachos of bar mitzvah in that case. Now we'll say, so again, what's the logic over here? Zabin me'akum. So if I go ahead and I purchase from a Gentile, so what's listen to this? So let's listen to this. If I go ahead and I purchase a field from a Gentile, so Reuven, the neighbor, can't have any rights. Reuven lives next door to the Gentile. Then Reuven comes knocking on my door. Hey, it's not right. I should have had the first right. I say, Reuven, I did you a favor. Literally translated, I chased away the lion from your border. So let's say, understand that when the Gemara says things like this, it's reflecting societal realities. It's reflecting a society in which a Jew lived literally with the fear of the Gentile, because again, the Gentile could choose one day to just seize my property. So when the Jew, when I come along and I say to Reuven, I know I bought the neighboring field, but I did you a favor because I removed a source of threat from your next door, from your property line. I did you a favor. Because I did you a favor, don't claim now bar mitzvah. Zabin la'akum, let's say if I sell to a Gentile, Akum vaday lav bar vaasisa yasharato. So it's actually very interesting. So obviously a Gentile is not subject to the laws of bar mitzvah. So what's it? Now what's interesting about this statement is the following. What you see is like this. Who does the din of bar mitzvah, who is that din upon? Interestingly enough, that din seems to really be upon the purchaser. That meaning the halacha is that if I am purchasing property, I have the obligation to yield my right of purchase to the neighbors. Apparently the din, it seems to be from here, is not really upon the seller, right? But much more upon the purchaser. Interesting enough.
Do you have to make a kidney in the quarter or the other daft from the name for the guy next door?
Because it's his right.
Right, but the neighbor's right.
It's the neighbor's right.
So that's a proof that it's the neighbor's.
No, it's the neighbor's entitlement. But the shaila is, who has the obligation to be vigilant in this halacha? It appears to be that it's much more the purchaser than it is itself. The right to purchase neighboring property is the right that belongs ultimately to the neighbor. The shaila is, who, upon whose obligation is it to exercise or to enforce, right, to ensure the laws of Amitra? So that it seems to be is the potential purchaser, not the seller. Interesting idea.
Correct.
Or it could be the purchaser. It depends. No, in the Gemara's case, it was the purchaser who's getting the kinyan over here. So I go over to Reuven. I want to purchase the field. I'm an outside guy. I want to purchase the field. I want to be makabel kinyan from Reuven, the neighbor. Shamute vaday mishantin alei ad makabel alei kol onse de asli machmasi. It's actually a very important halacha. So the Gemara says, if I do sell my property to a Gentile, as much as I could say to the neighbor, now, so I move out of the neighborhood, I sell my property to a Gentile, so what happens? I have an obligation to take upon myself any potential losses that my neighbors are going to occur because of the new Gentile owner. So if I, which is another way of saying that, if I introduce a potential threat into the neighborhood, I have an obligation to take responsibility for that threat. Pretty amazing. Mashkan, so let's say we should do the bar mitzvah. Both say, listen to this. Mashkon, collateral. So we'll say, in this case over here, I lent Reuven money. Chaylet Reuven money. Reuven gave me a piece of property as collateral. Reuven wants to sell me the collateral as a way of paying off the debt. The halachos of Bar Metzra do not apply there, because it will say, since I have it as a mashkon, I, the creditor, am already considered to be a quasi-owner. So the Gemara says, "Amrav Ashi, Amrav Sabi, the Masa Mechasya, my mashkanta." What does the word mashkanta mean? Tishachuna gabe. The item already resides with me. In other words, that I am already considered to be a quasi-owner, ultimately, again, of a mashkon. My nafkamina ladina. So as I said, it's very nice that mashkanta is a contraction of two words. Mashkona, the shchuna gabe, that it lives with me. But what's the practical ramification of that? Ladina de Barmester. Both say to teach me that if I have possession of a collateral, I need not yield that field to a neighbor. I am considered as if I'm already vested in that field. Limko barachok v'ligol b'karov, b'ra v'ligol b'yafeh, last day mishum dina de Barmester. Both say similarly again, let's say Reuven wants to sell me his fields, right? And what happens? He wants to go ahead and sell a field that's far away in order to go. So what's going to happen? He's going to sell me a field that's far away in order to go ahead and get a field that's closer to him. There's no, or to change one bad field for a good field. There's no din of bar netzra. Both say, essentially what we're seeing over here is that wherever the sale represents some type of unique opportunity for the seller and the purchaser, the halachos of bar netzra do not apply. Bar netzra only applies when all things are equal. So if I, as a purchaser, could just as easily purchase another field somewhere else, or the seller could just as easily go ahead and sell it to the neighbor, when all things are equal, the halacha is, give the neighbor the first right. But when all things are not equal, when this field represents some type of unique opportunity for someone, then lemaisa the halachos of din de bar metzra do not apply. Lekargo, lemezorin, lekvura, let's say din de bar metzra. We'll say similarly again, if I have to sell off my field to pay off my taxes, to pay for food for my family, or to chas v'shalom pay for burial expenses, there is no din of bar metzra. So what that means is sometimes I need to do a fire sale. Sometimes I need to unload property because I need cash. In those cases, the halacha does not bind me to wait to negotiate with my neighbor. I am permitted to go ahead and offload that property to the first seller interested. Because again, the Naradoyim said to pay off your taxes for food and for kvura expenses, you can even sell property without announcing it. I both say, now what that means is, we've seen over here before, when you sell off the property of Yisomim, you have to be careful to make sure that you get the best price for the property of Yisomim. So what do you have to do? You have to announce the sale for a little bit of time in order to ensure that it generates the maximum amount of interest. But everyone, there is an acute need, you could sell off property even without previous announcement. Le'isha uliyasmi ulushutvi lesba mishum dina debarasa. Well, it's another interesting halacha. If you sell this property to a woman, to orphans or to partners, there are also no halachos ultimately again of Dina de Bar Metzah. But say the reason, of course, over here is also because these represent unique opportunities. Rashi actually points out that again in Talmudic times, it wasn't always easy for a woman to purchase real estate. So if a woman was able to purchase real estate, so we do not take that back from her just because there is a neighbor. Again, the idea being any time the property sale represents a unique opportunity, the halachos of Bar Metzah do not apply. We'll have to stop over here. I'm going to record the rest of the daf in Meretz Hashem to the Mishnah, and we'll post on, so it'll be on the WhatsApp group. Again, till the end, the Gemara goes through the difference of Bar Metzra. Meretz Hashem, we'll see you later on.